Welcome to the Locked On Leafs podcast, your one-stop shop for all things Leafs. I'm your host, Mike DiStefano from TSN 1050 Toronto Radio, also known as Al's brother on TSN's Overdrive. You can hit me up on Twitter at Mickey_Canuck. Follow the show as well at Locked On Leafs. If you like what you hear today, please consider subscribing to the podcast. Leave a review and a rating as well. That would be absolutely fantastic. The draft technically is not yet over. We are recording this as of now. It's quarter after seven. We thought this would be long done by now. I am joined by Dauber Prospects, Tony Ferrari, once again to go over the Maple Leafs draft and the draft as a whole. And I can't believe that we're still sitting here watching it. And the Leafs actually just traded back into the seventh round just before we started recording. And they took Ryan Tavernberg. But can you believe that we're still sitting here and it's round seven and it's like past 7 o'clock? We're going on 8 hours here.
As much as I hate it, it totally makes sense. The scouting year that never ended just has to have the draft that never seems to end as well. This is it's a painful day.
Yeah, like it's been such a weird draft, and we're gonna get to the Maple Leafs draft here in just a moment. But there's one thing that I kind of, and by draft, I mean we're going to get to all the players that have been picked. And when it comes to the Leafs draft, there's something that I've realized to become a bit of a theme here. And it's that they're a lot of small skilled guys, and B, they've really veered away from the CHL here and the OHL specifically. And they've really gone overseas into the European ranks, and then they've picked a couple from the U.S. And I'm wondering if you think I could be onto something here, but is the fact that the CHL and maybe even the USHL seasons could be in jeopardy going into next season the reason why they decided to dip their toes into the European market so much?
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if that plays a role into it, because we see with the QMJHL started up and they're having some pretty big issues with COVID and having a few teams sit out. So the season over here is kind of really uncertain, whereas over in Russia, over in Finland, over in Sweden, their numbers are down, and even when they're not down, like in Russia, they're just plowing through, they're just playing the season. So I think that the Leafs did do it, kind of look at it and go, you know what, maybe these guys are going to get extra time next year. But at the same time, I look at most of these picks, especially the top three, and I go, you know what, they got some good value there, and those are guys, like all three of their top picks could have realistically been first rounders.
Interesting. Something else that I think was an overall theme is the fact that because they're going out and picking a lot of these guys, I feel like there's some recency bias in the fact that they're actually getting to see these guys play now and play in men's leagues as well, as opposed to playing the junior ranks. And I'm just not really sure the next time they'll be able to watch them on the ice.
Yeah, and I think that played a role, because the top three guys they got have all played pro hockey. They've all played men's league hockey.
Yeah.
Amirov's played in the KHL. He's playing in the KHL this year, and he's doing quite well. Ronnie Hirvonen's played in the Liga, and Topi Niemelä played in the Liga the entire season last year, and he did a pretty good job, and he adjusted his game. So he's an interesting pick in the third round. And yeah, I think the Leafs did a really good job of kind of going overseas and getting guys that have proven to be at least able to play at the men's game a little bit.
Let's get into some of these picks here, and let's start at their first round pick, 15th overall, Rodion Amirov, winger from Ufa out of the KHL. Give us a scouting report on him.
Well, Rodion Amirov is a really, really good player. I was a big fan of this guy. He kind of worked himself into that top group with me, with those guys like Lundell and Askarov and even Seth Jarvis. I had him at 12th on my board. He was the first guy out of that big kind of group at the top of the draft for me. And honestly, in my opinion, he kind of was a really good separator between the next tier and the first tier, because he wasn't quite at the same level as those other guys like Alexander Holtz and Lucas Raymond, like I said, but he wasn't quite, he was a little bit ahead of guys like Seth Jarvis and Dawson Mercer. So when he fell to 15 with the Leafs, I was stoked to see him go there, because he's excellent in transition. He's got a feistiness to him. He doesn't mind kind of engaging physically. He's not the biggest player at all by any means, and that's a theme through this draft class. But Rodion Amirov is 6 foot, 177, 175, and he's more than willing to engage physically, but he's not going to blow a guy up. That's just not his game. He plays a really skilled two-way game. My brother kind of talked to me yesterday when he was drafted, and kind of brought up Pavel Datsyuk. And while that's an obviously ridiculous ceiling to give any kid, Rodion Amirov has some of those aspects. He is a winger, so he doesn't play the center position like Datsyuk did, but he's really good defensively. He's really crafty defensively. He's always lifting sticks, taking pucks away. He's just walking into guys, basically stripping the puck off of them like a common thief on the street or something. It's pretty ridiculous, his ability to take the puck away at times. And then his speed and skill and flash and agility in the offensive zone is really what puts him over the top for me. This kid's a really, really good playmaker. Like I picture him on a wing of John Tavares or something, or even Austin Matthews in the future, and setting those guys up for a lot of goals.
How long is he away from the NHL, though? Because I know for a fact this season he is locked in to be in Russia with Ufa in the KHL. So we can't even begin to imagine him coming over until the following season. But is he somebody who may be even a longer-term project here for the Leafs?
No, honestly, I think after this season, because like you said, he is locked in. But after this season, depending on how well he does in the KHL, and from all signs so far this year, he's doing really well. So if he can continue playing at the rate he's playing at and the way he's playing, I think there's a realistic shot that he could be one of those options on the Leafs' wings in the top six next year even, because the Leafs are going to need to find ways to get those cheap contracts in the books. And Rodion Amirov certainly has the skill level to do it. So if he can prove the fact that he can play in Russia and be productive in Russia in the KHL, the second best league in the world this year, I see no reason on at least bringing him over and giving him that 10-game stint at the start of the year.
I joined the Locked On NHL podcast. They did a live draft show, and they were having all the hosts on afterwards talking about their picks. And something that I kind of thought about that I was just kind of thinking aloud when I was there was the fact that if this is a player who, again, not going to play this year, but if he can be a factor next year or the season after, you know, there's a couple of guys who Toronto have right now who may not be able to, they may not be able to bring back. One of those being Zach Hyman. Could you see a guy like Amirov taking Hyman's spot if they can't come up with a contract to extend him?
I could see him definitely taking a spot, but I don't think he'd fill the same role that Hyman plays. Hyman's that really good guy in the corner. He's going to dig out the puck. He's going to be that dog on a bone, right? And Amirov's more of that guy that takes away the puck in space and kind of, like I said, he's a little bit more similar to the way like Datsyuk played defense. He's going to lift the puck in the neutral zone. He's going to take the puck away when you're not really expecting him to even be in your back pocket. But he's not going to necessarily be the guy that digs in the corners. I think he's a really good playmaker. His playmaking, if I'm being honest, is probably not quite Mitch Marner, but probably at least a William Nylander level playmaker. So I think he could play in the NHL in 2 years. I see no reason why he couldn't take a spot on that, either that top line or the second line.
Where does he slide into the Leafs prospect rankings? And for this, I'll allow Robertson and Sandin to both be included here on this list, Liljegren as well. Where do you think he slots in here? Does he jump up to the top here since he's their latest pick, or does he slide somewhere in the middle? Where does he sit here with the Leafs top prospects?
If we're going to include Sandin, I maybe put him on the same level, maybe a little bit ahead. I'm really high on Amirov, though, so I could see the argument for putting him as the second best prospect. But I don't think there's any doubt in my mind that as a total offensive player, as a 200-foot player, as the overall game impact, he's going to be a better player probably than Nick Robertson. And we all know how good Nick Robertson is, so that's lofty expectations.
Were you surprised that they took him here at 15? Now, I know that you said that you had him at 12th on your board, but I did see him quite lower on other boards. I know that Craig Button had him roughly at round 24, so Bob McKenzie had him around 20 or 19. There's rumblings that they nearly did make a trade to move down. Would they have missed out on him if they waited and moved down, or do you think that 15 was pretty much where they had to pick him if this was their guy?
Well, kind of based on the picks that we've seen right afterwards and then some of the other wild picks in the first round, I think they probably could have traded back to 19 or something or in that 20 range and maybe grabbed him. But I was more than okay with them sitting at that spot because he was a guy that, like I said, he's got a little bit of that Russian factor, so there's automatically going to be like a 5-pick bump down the board. And I think he's a guy that at 15, you're getting a ton of really good value. And while the common fan may not be able to go, oh, Rodion Amirov, what a sick pick. In 2, 3, 4 years from now, we might be going, oh, look at that, Rodion Amirov, top 10 talent from this draft class.
I really hope that's the case. Honestly, the Leafs are going to need cheap talent over the next few years, especially with this flat cap coming into play. So if they could find some cheap talent like Rodion Amirov, Nick Robertson, that's going to go a long way, especially when you have players like Zach Hyman who are going to be potentially on their way out because the contract demands are just going to become too much. And if they can find guys to fill from within, that bodes well for Toronto moving forward. From the best-selling authors of The Daily Stoic comes the ultimate stoicism guide to success, resilience, and virtue. To accept what you cannot control and to adapt what you can, sports teams across the country are applying this popular philosophy by using stoicism's key idea. You control how to respond and play. You don't control what the refs and fans do or how the ball bounces. It's about what you did to adapt. Lives of the Stoics, The Art of Living from Zeno to Marcus Aurelius, is available now wherever books are sold. Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually we just brush it off and blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo. Or we just avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about it with a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication. It's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan, and if medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/LockedOnNHL and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/LockedOnNHL today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. That's GetRoman.com/LockedOnNHL. GetRoman.com/LockedOnNHL. Let's move on and let's chat about some guys here on day two that happened just earlier today in conversation here with Tony Ferrari from Dauber Prospects. So the Leafs actually moved down from the 44th spot in a swap with Ottawa, nabbed picks 59 and 64. Before we get into the players that they selected there, how'd you feel about the move? Did they lose out on a couple of players by moving down that far, or do you think it was worth it by picking up another early third?
I think it was really smart move. I love the move because especially after we've seen the player that Ottawa took in Tyler Cleven, and there's nothing against Tyler Cleven, but to be completely honest, he wasn't a guy that was even on my draft board. I wouldn't have drafted him at all. He's a big kind of mobile defenseman, but his tools end really after that. So I think he was a guy, if you were going to draft him, I'd probably wait till the third, fourth, fifth round even. So with the Leafs being able to move back those picks and picking up Ronnie Hervonen and Topi Niemelä, both guys who at times this year were in my first round, and Topi Niemelä ended the year still in my first round. So I think both those guys are excellent value picks at that spot.
So let's get into it. Let's talk about the guy who went 59th, and that's Roni Hirvonen, a centerman, 5'9", 164 pounds, playing in Liga. Your thoughts on this pick here?
Well, he's a guy that Joakim Nevalainen and I from Dauber Prospects as well, we've kind of debated a bunch of times this year because we love his game at center, and I think he can play center at the next level. I think he's definitely going to need to get stronger. He's 5'9", so it's going to be a struggle. But his game at the wing isn't quite as good, so it's really going to depend on where he goes and if he can really adapt himself to playing a little bit more on the outside as a winger, because he's excellent down the middle of the ice. I think he's really, really good. He's just always in the right spot at the right time. He's kind of like Anton Lundell light. To an extent, his two-way game isn't quite the level of Anton Lundell. His offensive game isn't quite the level of Anton Lundell, but he plays the same style of game despite being a lot smaller than Anton Lundell. So I think he's a guy that Toronto gets good value here. Worst case scenario, I think you get a good middle six winger. And I love the pick here. Honestly, he, like I said, he was a guy that at times this year, I think he was as high as 20 on my rankings. He was just outside the first round for myself and just in the middle of the second round for Dauber Prospects. So this kid's a really good value pick at that spot.
Topi Niemelä taken at 64th, a defenseman, 5'10", a slender 156 pounds, also from the Liga, playing in Karpat. 156 pounds. Is that going to be a concern for him coming over to North America on the smaller ice surface, or is he someone who can grow into his body a little more?
Yeah, he's definitely gonna have to grow into his body a little bit more, and I think those numbers are a little bit outdated because we did get kind of messed up at the end of the year without a combine. So I know for a fact there's at least three or four players from the OHL that are messed up. So I could only imagine the Finnish league and whatnot not having exact accurate measurements for these guys. So,
but they're playing right now. So technically, they're playing right now. So wouldn't that be an updated? Wait.
Yes and no, because like a lot of the numbers that we get on NHL.com are right from Central Scouting, and if I'm not mistaken, those numbers were taken back in June, and that's all somewhat outdated numbers. Like even a guy like Ty Tulio, he was listed at 5'9", I think. He's almost 5'11" now. I've seen him in person, so I know some of the numbers are a little bit off. And I think Topi Niemelä is one of those guys too, because he played pro hockey all year last year. He played up against men and he played good minutes against men. Like he was a guy that wasn't expected to be in the league last year. He was expected to go back down to the U20 team and kind of dominate there. But there was an injury at the start of the year and he stepped in and forced their hand. They couldn't take him out of the lineup because he was too good. He's a guy that adjusted his game in the junior circuit. He was an offensive guy. He was a guy that liked to push the pace. And when he got to the Liga, he was told, hey man, you got to play defense if you want to stay up here. He did that. He was really, really good two-way. He was making great first passes. I think what he does best is he's able to kind of leverage his small size, kind of get in front of a guy. He has no problem with kind of wedging himself in front of a guy between the puck and in along the boards and whatnot, and he's slippery enough to get out of it. He's a good skater, and I think he's going to be a good player. He's, like I said, he was in my first round, right at the end of the first round, for at 28 for me. So I think he's a guy that they're getting excellent value in the third round for. There was a lot of picks, especially from about 20 to 70, 20 to 80, that were just all over the board today. So I think there was a ton of value later in the draft, and Topi Niemelä was certainly one of them.
Yeah, that's something that you always find is really once you get outside of the first round, even from about picks 25 or so, like 25 to 75 is always just kind of a cluster of players that could really go anywhere. And both Irvin and Niemelä end up being those players. But for Niemelä, he seemed to be, and this is based on afterwards, he was speaking with some Toronto reporters, and I saw that, you know, he's enamored with Miro Heiskanen and also new Leafs defenseman Mikko Lehtinen. Does he model his game after these guys? I mean, obviously Heiskanen's one of the best up and coming defensemen in the league, but is that the type of player that Toronto should be expecting?
Stylistically, yes, especially Heiskanen, because Miro Lehtinen's a lot more of an offensive, just go for the offensive game kind of player with a big shot. That's his game. Whereas Miro Heiskanen, he's obviously an outstanding offensive player. We saw that in the playoffs. He's one of the best offensive defensemen in the league, but he really is an excellent defensive defenseman at Miro Heiskanen. And he does it in the same style that Topi Niemelä does it. Knowing that both of them aren't huge guys, they both kind of understand the fact that they're able to kind of use their stick, guy to guy to the boards, break up the play with their stick, use their skill to their advantage, because they can outskill guys a lot of times. Topi Niemelä does that really, really well. He knows how to work the angles and kind of work his own edges to kind of make sure he's in good position all the time. And I think the theme of these first three picks, especially Miro Heiskanen and Niemelä, they're all really smart players. They're guys where you can say they're always in the right spot at the right time. They understand the defensive side of the game while still having some of that offensive upside. And I think Niemelä was kind of the perfect pick for Toronto at this stage, because some of those guys, like we talked about Braden Schneider and we talked about Caden Gooley last time I was on, and those guys went a little higher than maybe their draft actual true value was worth. So I think you're not getting that much of a drop off with a guy like Topi Niemelä. So that value at 64th is great.
And I think we saw a lot of examples this year where teams, you know, the NHL is kind of a copycat league, and when you see teams like Dallas and Vegas and Tampa be really successful, being pretty well balanced and have a lot of size on their teams, it really did seem like in the second round there was a lot of teams, and even in the third round, a lot of teams that were prioritizing size over skill and hockey IQ, and that kind of allowed the Leafs to pounce on some of these players like Ronnie Irvin and Tipo Niemelä and some of these other guys that we'll get to. But I just think that the Leafs kind of stuck to their plan, and they really did kind of go with best player available, because these two guys, Hirvonen and Niemelä, at that point in the draft had to have been up there.
Yeah, they're in the top five of the guys available on my board at both their picks. So I wasn't upset with either of them. I actually had Niemelä ahead of Hirvonen. So when they passed on Hirvonen, I was like, maybe they missed out on the chance to get him. And then I joked with Joki actually on Twitter saying that they were going to get Niemelä at 64 anyways. And then they did. So I was more than happy with those two picks.
And then we head into the fourth round, and they took a goaltender, Artur Akhtyamov, a 6'1 goalie, 167 pounds, playing in the Russian Junior League. Thoughts on the goaltender there? 6'1, a little small for a goalie, especially in today's NHL, considering that a 6'4 goalie went the very next pick to Detroit.
Yeah, Artur Akhtyamov. There we go. Akhtyamov. He's really well liked in a lot of circles. Some of the more analytics based scouts that I know, they really like this kid. He puts up really good numbers, and he's got a lot of athleticism. So there's a lot to work with here. His size is a little bit smaller, but he's still a kid, right? So he may grow an inch, maybe two. 6'1" isn't terrible size for a goalie. Ideally, you'd like him to be 6'2", 6'3" at least. But I think this kid's athleticism is through the roof. It was a bit of an off the board pick. I wasn't quite expecting him to go this early in the draft, but I expected him to go at some point, and I think he's got a lot of skills. So it's a good pick for Toronto, in my opinion. Like I said, maybe a little higher than I'd taken him though.
Is he a guy who has that you see as an NHL goaltender, or is this more of a depth pick for the organization?
Well, I think you look at a guy like this and you see him as much or more of an NHL goaltender than either of the goaltending prospects that we really kind of talk about in Toronto with Ian Scott and Joseph Woll.
Okay.
I think he's at least on that level. He's more athletic than both of them, in my opinion. And I think this kid could take over as the top goaltending prospect in the organization within a year or two.
Well, that's a good sign. That is a good sign, especially since Ian Scott had such an injury-riddled season. They do need some depth at the position, especially with not knowing what's going to be happening with Anderson at the end of the year. Did you see the cool little three-way phone call that Dubas had with him and Nick Antropov to basically tell him and translate what was going on and that he was picking them and how they were excited to? Did you see that video floating around?
Yeah, I seen it on Twitter. It's a pretty cool moment for the kid, I bet.
Yeah.
And I mean, just little stuff like that. They did a lot of that this year in the draft, and I'll say that the NHL did a pretty good job with that stuff.
They did. Other than the fact that day two was 8 hours long, it was pretty good draft. Moving on, let's get up the other player who went in the fourth round. William Villeneuve, defenseman, 6'1", 175 pounds, playing in the Q. The only player that they took in the CHL this year. Your thoughts on this pick here?
Oh, man, William Villeneuve. He's a guy that some people love and some people hate, and I'm kind of somewhere
that.
In the middle, because when he has the puck on his stick and when he's playing in the offensive zone, I really like this kid. He's similar to Jeremy Poirier in the sense that he's really, really good offensively, and he was actually paired with Poirier a lot this year, so it was a tire fire defensively at times. But yeah, he's really good offensively, but his defensive game is there's a lot of work. He's got the tools. He's a good skater. He's got decent size, 6'1", 175. He's the biggest player Toronto drafted today, actually. And I think he's there's tools. There's something to work with here. And I like the fact that they didn't jump on him in top 100, like a lot of teams kind of talked about doing. Like, he was a guy that was up on a lot of draft lists. So seeing him fall to 122, he got taken in the right spot if you're going to take him. I probably wouldn't have taken him. There's maybe a little bit more value on other guys in that range, but he's a good player. He's a toolsy player, and he's the kind of guy that, with Toronto being such a good developmental system, if you put this raw talent in that system, you might come out with a gem, and he might be the best defenseman coming out of this class, even with Topi Niemelä.
Really? So you're that high on him if he can put it together? The only thing I question is, like, the Leafs have so many guys who have a lot of offensive skill and offensive talent, but as a defenseman, defense is kind of important, and if you're what you're telling me is that's kind of second nature to him, that's a little worrisome, knowing what we saw happen with a guy like, let's say, Tyson Barrie this past season.
Oh, and let me make this clear. I am not super high on this guy because I have very little faith that he actually gets it worked out. The talent is there, like I said, but the mindset, he has to really get that going, because there were times in the defensive zone this year where I just skipped the player. I just fast forward the tape because I was like, well, this is an unmitigated disaster. Nothing I see here is going to give me anything about this team or this player or anyone else on the ice right now.
So you're mostly upset because they passed on Tata Tulio for this cat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Just a little bit upset about that. But he was a guy that, like I said, he's got all the tools. If they can make it work, he's got the talent, but I have not the most faith in him.
So then the Leafs end up moving up here in the fifth round, and they took Dmitry Ovchinnikov, a centerman out of Russia, 5'11", 161 pounds, and yeah, you can understand that there's a pattern here of very slender picks all throughout this draft class. Your thoughts on this prospect?
This is a swing. I love this swing. I tweeted it out right away once this pick came down. I there was an audible oh snap when he was drafted, because I love this kid. He's a ton of speed, a ton of offense. He's okay defensively. He's not terrible defensively. He's probably a net neutral in that area of the ice, but the speed and like just the instincts he has offensively are really intriguing. He is super thin though. He's 5'11", 161, and he's not a strong player. When he has played at the KHL level, including at times early this season, he has gotten pushed around a little bit, but the skill seems to always somewhat shine through in games. So it's one of those situations where you're like, this is a guy that there's something there that you can tell that there is a really interesting offensive tool set there, a really interesting guy that I doubt he plays center at the next level. He's almost assuredly going to be a winger. And he's got that speed to burn up and down the side. So I think he's a really good pick at this range. It's a long shot, but I mean, this is a guy that I think in my top 70 of my rankings. And when I put him there, I knew that was a little of a hot take, but he's got a ton of speed, a ton of skill. I know there's a few other guys like Will Scouching. He does some analytics tracking on guys, and Dmitry Ovchinnikov comes out really, really well in a lot of the analytics. So this is a Dubas pick if I've ever seen one. And honestly, this is one of those picks that I was really big fan of in this draft.
How long do you think he needs? Like, it sounds like he's a pretty raw prospect, a guy like this. What's the timeline you put for him, if he even puts it together, to make an impact here in the NHL?
Yeah, he's a few years away. He's kind of the guy that you draft this year and you go, okay, play over in Russia for a couple more years till your contract's up, and maybe you sign another one-year deal, or you come over to the AHL and see what you can do. But I think this kid's got a real shot at being a middle six or even a top six player. He can play really, really well with high-skill teammates. So I think this kid, the talent's there, the potential for a really high-end offensive player is there. But he needs to get in the weight room, and he needs to get a little bit stronger, because, yeah, getting pushed around is not going to work at the AHL level, let alone the NHL level.
Moving along here in the sixth round, their next pick, they took VT Miettinen, another winger out of Finland playing in the Finnish Junior League. Another small guy, 5'9", 161 pounds. Thoughts on VT Miettinen?
This is a guy that a lot of people I talked to, including some NHL scouts, thought was he was going to go higher. Like there was even chatter. Like I've talked to NHL scouts that had him in the third round. So with this draft having so many guys kind of going off the board and teams' lists being kind of torn up and thrown to the wind at times, it seemed this was a guy that just kind of fell. He tore up the Finnish junior circuit last year. He would have played in the Liga, but he had an NCAA commitment. If I'm not mistaken, he's going to Harvard. But he's got a ton of talent. He set the junior SM Liga record for goals in a season with 42. Again, he was one of those players that should have been playing up in the Liga, should have been playing men's hockey, because he was clearly just dominant at the junior level. So this is a kid that I think you give him a couple of years and maybe there's something there, especially because he's going to the NCAA. So he's going to develop there. That's a great spot for him to go get stronger, play against a little bit bigger competition, play against stronger competition, and really see what you got there, because at 168 in the sixth round, this is again, the Leafs went for a lot of swings at this point, and this kid has a chance to be one of the steals of the draft.
Let's do some rapid fire here as we get through kind of the last five picks that the Leafs took. Axel Rindell, defenseman out of Finland.
He played with Mikko Kokkonen, actually, Leafs prospect, drafted last year. He's a decent offensive guy. He's a little bit older for the draft class, if I'm not mistaken. He's already 20, so he's a double overager. Decent offensive guy. Needs to work on his skating. That's the big thing for him.
Joe Miller, the easiest name to say out of this entire draft class. An American center, 5'8", 147 pounds out of the USHL. Joe Miller, what about this guy?
Joe Miller. The crazy thing about Joe Miller is, so I honestly, I had no clue who this was. When he was drafted, I was like, oh, so they just put a random name in the generator and threw it out.
That's what Joe Miller sounds like, just generic name. It's Joe Smith, then the second most generic name, Joe Miller.
Yeah, this is the guy you start on your create a player on NHL, exactly. The video game. So, but one of the things, so I immediately went to his Elite Prospects page, as every single person in Toronto did. And I noticed, the first thing I noticed was his birthday, September 15th, 2002. That means if he were born about 4 hours later, he probably would have been in next year's draft. So this is the absolute youngest player in the entire draft. And Toronto has a habit of doing that. They like drafting younger guys. He is small, 5'9", 147. And when I watched him tape before this to kind of get a gauge for what this kid is, that was it. He is small and he is skilled. He's got a really good shot. He's got a shot that kind of elevates quickly. He's got a good wrist shot. His playmaking's okay from what I've seen, and he's a good skater. So there are some tools there, but he hasn't played at really any high level at all. I hate high school kids. I say it all the time. I'm the meanest person in the world to these high school draft eligible kids. I wouldn't bother drafting a single kid out of high school myself personally, because I just don't see the value in it. But when you look at his numbers, he had 59 points in 25 games in Minnesota high school. So those are pretty good numbers. Like, he put up production, and he's going to play in the USHL next year with the Chicago Steel. So I think they went, hey, there's this kid that maybe he's a third round pick in next year's draft if he's born 4 days earlier. So, hey, take the swing and maybe you get a good player. He's going to a great system in Chicago. So,
well, I think that's what these you know, sixth, seventh, even fifth round picks are all about. They're all about taking flyers and swings on guys who have high upside, and you just hope that they hit. John Fusco, another one of these American kids, he's on his way to Harvard, actually. Defenseman, 5'9", 174 pounds. What do you know about John Fusco?
If you look at his Elite Prospect page, he's actually listed a little bit bigger than that. He's at 5'11", 185 on there, or 181, sorry, on there.
Oh.
And he is a little bit older for the draft class, and I think this is a guy that, again, it's another high school kid who I generally avoid, but As I watched some of his tape, and he's a physical defenseman. He likes to step into a guy as he crosses the blue line and just level him. I watched one full game kind of right before, like, all of his shifts from a full game right before I came on with you. And there were three or four times where he just blew a dude up at the blue line. And so this dude is not unwilling to throw a hit. His skating is pretty good. Like, I thought he was really agile and quick. His straight line speed probably needs a little bit of work, but as a defenseman, you don't really need your straight line speed as often. You need your agility and your quickness a little bit more. And he had that. So I think this is a cool little flyer that the Leafs took. I don't know exactly where it ends up. It's a sixth round pick, so kind of who cares, but he's going to university. He's going to Harvard. He's going to go to, that's a good school. So this is a kid that maybe works out eventually, because despite being a little bit smaller, he is a physical defenseman.
Yeah, and I think most importantly, he shoots right, which is something that the Leafs desperately need, and beef up that system with as much as they want. And I'll tell you what, 5'11", 181 looks a heck of a lot better than the 5'9", 174 that NHL.com has him listed at. All right, keeping it going here in the seventh round with what we thought was the final pick, actually, in the Leafs draft until they traded back in late. Wyatt Shingoth. Very strange last name to even look at, let alone say, but we're going to go with Shingoth. Centerman, also another American coming out of the USHL. What do you know about him?
I think he's a good defensive center. I don't know how much offensive upside he has. Like, he put up some points with Waterloo this year in the USHL. He had 38 points in 47 games, so he wasn't even really a point of game player, but his defensive IQ is kind of what you notice about him. He was a guy that I kind of noticed every time I watched Waterloo. It was just one of those guys that I never really kind of marked down as a guy that I really banged the table for, but you notice him defensively, and you see he's always getting the puck out, and he's always doing what he's supposed to do. He's responsible down low. He's more than willing to kind of go below the goal line even as a center. So this is a good defensive pick. And again, he is young for the draft class. He's August 3rd, 2002, a month and a half away from being eligible for next year. So kind of follow the theme this year of Toronto drafting a smaller guy who kind of has some upside because he is a younger player. And 5'11", 190 is what they have him listed on Elite Prospects. He shoots left as a center, and I think he probably sticks at center. His upside isn't high. I'm not going to deny it, and I'm not going to pretend like he's going to be this top six center or anything. But maybe he's a defensive specialist on your fourth line, kind of playing the penalty kill, and those guys are valuable. And I mean, if you can get any player in the seventh round, you're laughing.
Exactly, exactly. Like, that's what a majority of these guys, once you get this late in the draft, you pick out somebody who has a specific skill, and, you know, whether it's a face-off specialist or a shot blocker, a penalty killer, and you hope that they develop into an NHL player. If not, you only spent a seventh round pick on them. That is not lucrative draft capital. So we'll see what this Wyatt Schoengoth ends up being. John Fusco, Joe Miller, you know, we'll see what all these guys end up being. Ryan Dverberg, who was the player that the Leafs traded back into the seventh round, trading a 2021 seventh to Boston to move up to 213 to get back into the draft and select that kid. 5'10", 168, playing in the OJHL for the Toronto Junior Canadiens. This one is a very interesting pick.
It's interesting because they traded up for it. It's one of those, like, trading back into the round to get an OJHL kid is kind of one of those situations where I'm like, I don't personally have this kid ranked. I don't know much about him, to be completely honest. The OJHL isn't a league that I really heavily dive into because they just don't produce much talent. Like, they produce almost less talent than high school hockey in the U.S. So it's not really a hotbed for talent. So I look at this and I go, you know what? The Leafs had one of their scouts is really banging the table if they get into the late seventh round and take this kid. So I have a feeling it wasn't a Dubas pick. It was probably one of his scouts that were going, hey, like, we should trade next year's seventh round pick because next year's draft isn't as deep. This kid is going to be better than whoever's going to be there at seven in the seventh round next year. And it's a swing. It's a swing for the fences. It's an OJHL kid. Who knows if he even works out?
Trying to see here if he is en route to, yeah, Harvard. So he's another kid who's going to Harvard. So, I mean, they like their kids that go to Harvard. They're smart players. They took Nick Abruzzese in the draft last year. This is, the second player who's en route to Harvard that they've taken in this draft. So, you know, if you're going to Harvard, you're obviously a smart player, which means probably have a high hockey IQ.
Yeah, that's the hope, right? You always try to, if you're going to draft these kids and go with the kids that are going to college, you look at the school they're going to too, because let's be honest, like, it takes a lot to be a student at Harvard and it takes a lot to be a hockey player. So if he can do those two things together, that's a good sign for this kid's possibly working out in the future. And like I said, he's a late round pick, and realistically there's not going to be much offensive upside. Like, you're drafting a kid out of the OJHL. He's probably going to be a guy that plays on your fourth line, plays maybe on your third line at best. And I mean, you take the swing, right? If one of your scouts is really banging the table, that's where your GM has to kind of just trust his team and let him take the pick.
You want Chinese, they want pizza, and somebody is always craving Froyo. There's something for everyone on DoorDash. DoorDash is the app that brings you food you're craving right now to your door. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left safely outside your door with new contactless delivery drop-off settings. With over 300,000 partners in the U.S., Puerto Rico, Canada, and Australia, you can support your local go-tos or choose your favorite international restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, and even the Cheesecake Factory. Many of your favorite local restaurants are still open for delivery. Just open the DoorDash app, select your favorite local restaurant, and your food will be left at your door. DoorDash deliveries are now contactless to keep communities we operate in safe. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code LOCKEDONNHL. That's $5 and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app on the App Store and enter code LOCKEDONNHL. Don't forget, that's code LOCKEDONNHL for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. In conversation with Tony Ferrari from Dauber Prospects, just want to get your overall thoughts on the draft. In your eyes, I know it's super, super early, way too early, but who in your eyes won the draft?
Well, I'm going to be doing an article on Dauber Prospects where I kind of put teams on podiums and give them a gold, silver, and bronze medal. And the team I know is going to be in there for sure is going to be the LA Kings. They had a great draft. Starting off with Quentin Byfield, that's an outstanding pick. I mean, maybe the best pick in the draft because Lafreniere was almost guaranteed to be going number one. But they got a lot of value after that. And that was what I really liked about the LA Kings draft. They got Helga Grons in the second round, Brock Faber in the second round as well. Those are two defensemen that I think are going to be really projectable to the NHL and going to be playing a little bit of a different style of game from each other. Helga Grons is that two-way defenseman that can play on your second power play, your second penalty kill, and kind of do a little bit of everything. Brock Faber is a really talented player, excellent skater. And then it was some of their picks in the later rounds of the draft. Kasper Simon-Tivels, tons of skill. Love this kid. He was one of the fastest rising Finns on the draft boards this year. A guy like Martin Kromiak, he played with Shane Wright, and maybe he fell because of that, because he was a guy that put up a pretty decent amount of points in the OHL, and he ended up getting drafted in the fifth round. So I think they got tons of value late in the draft, and I think the LA Kings won the draft personally.
And they traded for Elias Andersson, a kid who went seventh overall, 3 years ago? So taking a flyer on him and hoping that he can come over to North America and make a splash. I mean, giving up at the 60th overall pick for a guy who's a first-round talent just two seasons ago seems like a no-brainer as well.
Yeah, I mean, every time the Kings did something today, even when, like, just the small moves they made, the picks they made, everything seemed to just come up LA Kings. And, I mean, them and the Hurricanes are the two teams that probably are the best in the class for me so far.
I have this theory about the Hurricanes. They've done really, really well in the past few years. They've got a great, great scouting staff over there because they seem to always be the draft darlings of draft Twitter. And I am confused. I'm not confused. I am convinced that the Carolina's draft table is being run by draft Twitter because they seem to stop the slides all the time, and the Carolina Hurricanes are the guys who steal the draft Twitter darlings.
Oh, they definitely do, like every year. And honestly, it's probably a lot of the fact that they do have a fairly analytics-based kind of front office. Like, they have a lot of people back there that really look at the numbers, and they look at the on-ice performance too, because they wouldn't be getting these talented kids like Seth Jarvis and Noel Gundler if they weren't. But this team is just constantly stopping slides, like you said. Getting a guy like Zion Ubik in the fourth round at 115th overall. This kid was 20th on a lot of boards at the start of the season and in the top 50 on a lot of boards to end the year. A guy like Alexander Pashin, this might honestly be the steal of the draft. This guy and Tyler Tulio were the two that I was waiting to get drafted in the second and third round, and both of them went super late. Just the talent on this team and the talent of this draft class, I think that the Carolina Hurricanes are, again, the gem of the draft.
I think Ottawa did pretty good, too. I mean, you look at the bounty of picks that they had. They're able to come away with Tim Stützle, who you said was one of your favorite players of this draft. They ended up going with Jake Sanderson as the first defenseman off the board, who, again, you're like 1A, 1B. And then they got a pretty good one also towards the end of the first round. And then they trade a second-round pick and pick up Matt Murray, a guy who they project to be their number one goaltender. And, you know, the last 48 hours, if I'm a Sens fan and if I'm a Sens organization, I'm pretty happy with the way things shook out.
Yeah, if I'm a Sens fan, I look at what they did from the Matt Murray trade to the Robbie Arventi pick, and I love everything they did before that. It seemed like their night went sideways a little bit once they made that trade with Toronto, though. Tim Stützle, again, my favorite player in the draft. Love this kid. Jake Sanderson, if I wasn't a coward, I probably would have had him as my number one defenseman on the board, but instead I kept doing the 1A, 1B thing with him and Drysdale. And Ridley Gregg is a sneaky good player. I every time I watch this kid, I like the way he plays. He just plays with a lot of feistiness, a lot of, like, just jam. He is a really, really good kind of prick on the ice. Like, he's just a skilled prick. And honestly, I was a big fan of the pick, even though he was a little bit down my draft board. I thought that mix in the first round was really good. They might have left a little bit of talent on the table taking Jake Sanderson at five. But, I mean, you're drafting a defenseman in the NHL, right? Like, this kid is going to be the complete package. So I don't think they really lost that much value, despite some people kind of complaining about that. Robbie Arventy, big shot, needs to work on skating, but that shot is more than enough to take the draft. And then they made that Matt Murray trade. They got their goalie. That's a great spot.
Yeah.
I'd rather trade a second round pick than draft a goalie and kind of hope he works out. So that's the good of their draft class. Then they made that trade with Toronto. I don't know why. They probably could have taken Cleven later on. I think the two players that Toronto got were twice, three times the value of Tyler Cleven, to be completely honest. And then the rest of their picks were kind of questionable. Igor Sokolov was a guy that I thought would go later in the draft. He put up a lot of goals this year. And
that guy's a unit. Absolute unit.
Just big boy, 6'4", 225. But the problem with him is he doesn't skate very well. He's really heavy on his feet. And there are real concerns. And him being a double overager, drafting him in the top 70 picks at 61 was kind of a little bit shocking to me. But and then the rest of their guys, they just kind of went off the board a little bit with all of them. So, I mean, there was a lot of good at the top and a lot of kind of questions at the back end. But if you're going to have questionable picks, I'd rather them be from 60 on than from 50 in.
Exactly. Any drafts that you weren't a big fan of?
The back half of Ottawa's. But honestly, I think Boston wasn't really that great of a draft. I every time Boston came up on the board, I was like, oh, okay, why? Mason Lowry kind of came up, and I got so many messages when he got drafted. They're like, do you know this kid? I'm like, he's a person probably. Like, it just kind of really off the board. Like, I know the kid. I've seen him play, but it was just in the top 100, 150 was even kind of crazy. And then Trevor Kuntar, he's a good player. I think he's a Boston Bruins type of player. He's that guy that's going to more than willingly engage physically and kind of crush you along the boards and everything. But they left a lot of value on the board there at 89, and they were limited with their picks. Mason Langenbrunner is a guy that I think he got drafted because of his name value, to be completely honest. And
is he the son of Jamie?
Yeah. He's the son of Jamie Langenbrunner. So there's the NHL bloodlines, which every team seems to love, and they couldn't stop talking about it on the broadcast today. And Riley Duren is kind of a guy. But again, they didn't have a first-round pick, so it was hard to love their class in general. But they kind of went off the boards with the picks that they did have.
And Chris Draper, also kind of a cool moment at the top of the seventh round, selecting his son, Keenan Draper at the top of the round there. So I thought that was also cool. A nice little legacy pick for the Detroit Red Wings. Were you surprised that we didn't see a lot of movement in terms of trades at the draft? Like, I feel there was a lot of buildup heading into it that we were going to see fireworks and so much movement. So many guys were going to go. Teams were looking to move out contracts and move around money. And at the end of the day, outside of this Matt Murray trade, and I guess Nick Bonino also got moved in the second round, we didn't really see anything going on outside of teams just trading and swapping picks.
Yeah, I think that's a kind of just a result of not being in the same room. Like, there were so many guys that were just kind of on Zoom calls. Like, Steve Yzerman was barely even, like, he didn't even show up on the broadcast at all, despite being the GM of the Red Wings, who had a ton of picks. And I thought they did a really good job. But yeah, it was just, I think teams, you can only have so many Zoom calls going, right? Like, you have 5-6 Zoom calls going, you're negotiating with 4 or 5 GMs, you forget to mute the right one, and then you're kind of in a tough spot. So I think we got to remember, most of these GMs are the 200 hockey men who weren't necessarily around when most of this technology came out. So I'm sure it wasn't the easiest situation for any of these guys. And I think, despite the fact that it took 75 hours to get the draft done, they did a decent job.
That was so long. So long. Before I get you out of here, I do want to quickly take a peek at next year's draft. Who are we looking at the top of the board for the 2021 NHL draft?
Well, the 2021 draft's an interesting one because there's a lot of talent on the back end and not so much at forward. I think they're a team that I think there's a lot of guys that have a lot of potential on the back end, because there's guys like Carson Lambos, who's a little bit along the lines of a Jake Sanderson, where he's got that complete game. He's really, really good defensively. For my money right now, he's my number one defenseman for next year, and honestly might be my number one player. And that's not a popular opinion as of right now, but this kid is stout. He is really, really good defensively, and he can move a puck with the best of them. I think this kid is a really powerful skater. He's got good size. He's my favorite player in the draft next year so far, and he's going to be in that conversation for the number one, definitely in the top five. Then you have Brant Clark, the offensive phenom from the back end in Barrie, and he's got a ton of skill. Once they fired Warren Reichel and Barrie this year, his game took off in the second half of the season. He was over a point a game as a 16-year-old rookie defenseman in the OHL. So he's going to be a stud next year. I won't be shocked to see him kind of pushing that first overall pick. And then you have guys like Owen Power and Simon Edvinson, who are both huge center or huge defensemen who can skate like the wind and have a lot of offensive upside. You have those four big defensemen at the top of the draft. And then you have Atu Ratu, who's the brother of Aku Ratu, who's the Phoenix Coyotes draft pick. And Atu is a kind of 200-foot good offensive center. He's got a good shot, and he plays a responsible game. He kind of reminds me of Anton Lundell a little bit this year, with a little bit better offensive upside maybe, and not quite so good defensively. This kid is the prototypical Finnish center coming out of the draft. He's got a chance to be the first Finn taken number one in the draft ever. So there's going to be a lot of competition up top next year, because there's no surefire number one pick at all.
Does that, well, that usually can mean one of two things. It either means that it's a little bit of a weaker draft, kind of like what we saw back in, I guess, 2017, when Heischer ended up going number one. Turned out to be a pretty good draft when you think about it in hindsight. But or that could mean that it's a really deep draft. What are we expecting out of 2021?
Well, I think it's pretty similar to that 2017 draft, to be completely honest, because I wouldn't be shocked if maybe a couple forwards go up top with maybe Atu Ratu and maybe Cole Sillinger or Dylan Genther from out west, and they make a kind of push to go to the top as well. And then you got the defensemen. In 2017, you had Heiskanen and Makar, and in 2021, you could have Brant Clark and Owen Power or Carson Lambos and Simon Edvinson. You're going to have really good defensemen next year's draft. Defensemen always struggle to go first overall, so it's going to be a battle for that top spot, but there really is no surefire number one pick. And like you said, it is maybe not necessarily a weaker draft, but there isn't that top end talent that we're used to. There isn't the top 10 that we're used to with the last couple of years that we've gotten. So it's going to be a little bit weaker at the top, and it's not going to be as flashy of a draft, that's for sure.
It's so weird because you say names, you know, Brant Clark, Cole Sillinger. I think Brennan Othman's going to be another player that's yep. going to be in this draft. And these are guys who a couple of years ago, I was fortunate enough to be calling play-by-play at the Canada Games, the Winter Games back in, what was it, 2018, I believe. And they were like just young 14-year-old kids or 15-year-old kids. And, you know, Shane Wright was there. Savoy was there. And now they're a year away from getting drafted. I remember just watching them play as youngins before they're even in junior hockey. And now they're a year away from being drafted. It's kind of wild how quickly time flies. Before I get you out of here, actually, I have one more thing to ask you, just because this news came down just about an hour ago for the Maple Leafs, and that's both Jeremy Bracco and Freddie Gauthier not qualified by the Leafs. Are you surprised by either of these moves?
To be completely honest, I'm not really. I think the writing was kind of on the wall for Jeremy Bracco. It was kind of put up or shut up time, and then he had to take the leave of absence from the team as well. And there have been tons of rumors around that. And I'm not going to say anything because they are just that. They're rumors. It never seemed to work out for him. He kind of had that one really good year in the AHL. But honestly, I don't think he's an NHL player. I haven't thought that for a couple of years. And I was a big Bracco supporter. As for Gauthier, they didn't qualify him, but they're going to re-sign him. This guy's here forever. He's never leaving.
You think?
I wouldn't be shocked if they sign him to a cheap deal and maybe he plays in the AHL, kind of NHL. He's that tweener guy. I think he's back probably on a cheap deal. Bracco, I don't think he's back though.
So they didn't want to end up going to arbitration and then having to force to pay that number. I guess, yeah, I could see him come back on a pretty cheap contract, like $700,000, and yeah, have him be one of those guys who kind of they can just stash down in the minors if need be. If, you know, the numbers end up putting him there. All right, man. Really appreciate you taking the time again. You were fantastic to the show earlier this week in the pre-draft process and in the post-draft process. You, my friend, have deserved yourself quite the frothy beverage. I hope you're going to take the night and kind of recharge and refresh yourself, because I'm sure it's been quite the busy week for you.
Yeah, that's the plan for after this. I'm going to go out to the living room and grab something to drink and just sit down and sit in silence for a few minutes.
Beautiful, beautiful, man. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time, hopping on the pod all week to help us with our draft coverage. But it's over, man. It's over. And, well, you could at least take a week off and then you could start looking ahead to 2021. But that's going to do it for us here today on the podcast. I'd like to thank you all for listening and supporting the show. You can subscribe to the Locked On Leafs podcast on all podcasts and platforms to receive daily Leafs content. Follow myself on Twitter at Mickey_Canuck. Follow the show at Locked On Leafs. And follow Tony at TheTonyFerrari. And Tony, why don't you tell the folks where they can read your work and listen to your work, because I'm sure you're going to have a whole bunch of post-draft content coming out as well throughout the few days.
Yeah, you'll be able to find a bunch of my work on Dauber Prospects. We're going to be coming out with a ton of stuff. Like I said, I'm going to be doing the Olympic podium for the three best draft classes, in my opinion, coming out in the next, probably tomorrow morning. And then, yeah, find us at Dauber's Draftcast. Myself and Joakim Nevalainen will be breaking down the entire draft and talking about some picks that we liked and picks that we didn't like. Hey, New Jersey, drafting Shakir Mekhamudulin. But yeah, it's going to be fun. There's a lot of stuff coming up on Dauber Prospects.
Actually, I asked you what was the steal of the draft. What was the draft pick where you went, what? Really? Because I know that on the Sportsnet broadcast, it was when Columbus took, was it Chinnikov in the first round, and literally it seemed like nobody knew who he was. Who was that pick for you?
Yeah, the pick for me initially was Shakir Mekhamudulin. Yeah. When New Jersey took him at 20, I got up and I yelled, yeah, they finally did it. Someone did it. Because this is a guy that a lot of people hated. I personally, again, he was a guy that I just didn't have on my draft board. He's a big guy, and that's kind of it. And teams love that physical specimen, and that's what he is. So I kind of described him as he's a really big ball of clay. But the issue is that clay is in a cave, which is on the other side of a mountain, and you don't have a map. So that's what you're working with him. So 20 was really rich for me. But I cheered it on because I love the chaos. And then Columbus walked right up to the Zoom podium and drafted Igor Chinnikov, who I knew who he was. He was a guy that I was like, oh, maybe he'd take a chance in the sixth round or something like that.
And just, they said he was a top 10.
Line and walked up and he was just 10. Like, this is my guy.
They had him in the top 10 on their boards, they say.
They're crazy people. They're just fire all those scouts if he was in the top 10 of your boards. I'm sorry. I don't say that normally, but that would be awful.
This is the same regime who took a beating when they passed on Puljujärvi to take Pierre-Luc Dubois. So I'll reserve my judgment for a couple of years, but that is going to be something that a lot of draft people are going to be circling and watching and see how that plays out because – again, a guy who you have as a 6th, 7th pick goes in the first round. That is a high price to pay for a flyer and a question mark like Chinnikov, but they clearly like him. Tony, thanks so much for this. Have a good night, man.
Yeah, you too, man. Thanks for having me.
If you guys want some more hockey talk, be sure to check out the Locked On NHL podcast where myself and four other Locked On hosts discuss the latest around the NHL. I'll be back with another episode tomorrow, but until then, keep it locked right here on Locked On Leafs.